So she fell in love with her psychiatrist.
Yeah, as one does. She, yeah, tale as old as time.
Transfers, of course. She says that she talked to the psychiatrist about being in love with him.
Yeah.
And that he abused his power by letting her continue to be his patient. But also she would say crazy stuff like he said self-harm was a special interest of his. So he said something like...
Like in an autistic way or like a professional way?
I assume a professional way. He said something like, I'm going to ask you this because it's a special interest of mine. Have you ever considered self-harm or have you ever done self-harm? And she took that to mean that she was special.
That's just a misinterpretation of his words. That one's on her.
I think they're all on her, honestly.
No, like hold on, to be clear, like not immediately ending the doctor-patient relationship sounds like it's on him.
You're not actually meant to.
Oh, if you, sorry. I'm not AMA certified. Who certifies that?
Apparently, you're not meant to, because if you end it right there and then straight away,
dramatic.
Then it teaches them
to hide
they're thinking. Yeah. So you're meant to like either try and transfer that romantic love into like whatever.
Platonic. You're supposed to make them fall in love with Plato instead.
So she was talking to her other therapist about the first psychiatrist. The other therapist wasn't supporting her enough, so she like cut ties with her and started going to ChatGPT, calling him Henry for advice. And then Henry started being a little bad. I think maybe they updated it to ChatGPT.
Yeah, I was about to say, was this five rolling out?
So then she changed over to Claude, and Claude started calling her the Oracle because she was going online and like telling everyone about her.
Wow. Okay, keep going. I haven't read this story at all. This is not... I thought this was like an anodyne New York Times opinion piece. I did not think this was this.
No, it's like a very public mental health crisis for this lady who people think has like borderline personality disorder or something, where she's going in on her psychiatrist disease. And basically doxed him and will say stuff like, oh, he told me once, oh, you're wearing glasses today. So clearly he likes my glasses, so I wear these glasses every day afterwards.
Who among us hasn't done that, though?
Or I went in and told him about this very sexual dream I had about him, and his eyes went absolutely wide. Clearly he's scared that he loves me.
Oh, okay. So I was like, okay, she got the emotion right. Oh, never mind.
It's been a big thing online, and it's just made me think about AI psychosis, because apparently Peter Thiel thinks... his AI is telling him the secrets of the government.
It was only a matter of time before he developed some kind of psychosis anyway. So it's kind of fun that it's like, it ties in thematically to our dystopia of the week.
And he funds ChatGPT, doesn't he?
Yeah, he funds everything.
So it's funny that his own money is funding his own psychosis.
What do you mean that AI is telling you the secrets of the government? You literally are having meetings with like government leaders. You are the secrets of the government.
Yeah. Have you heard that joke about the conspiracy theorist guy that goes to heaven?
I don't think I have.
So this guy that's really into conspiracies dies and goes to heaven. And God says, welcome to heaven. As your reward for arriving here, I can answer one question. And the conspiracy guy says, who killed JFK? And God says, oh, well, it was... what's his
Lee
name?
Harvey
who killed
Oswald.
Lee Harvey Oswald on the knoll by himself, blah blah. And then the conspiracy theory guy is like, oh my god, this goes right to the top.
Okay, pretty good. And I also like that the way you told it, the knoll is like the conspiracy theory answer and the book depository is the non-conspiracy answer. So I like that God thinks that it was the grassy knoll, but it was Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone. I like this. You should bring a joke to each week. This is a nice new recurring segment for antisocial scientists. Name drop.
It's our first time introducing ourselves.
Why don't you introduce yourselves? You say?
Properly.
I'm Justin Edwards, a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Oulu.
I'm Diego Garialdi, an assistant professor in computer science in the University College Dublin.
I'm glad we're re-recording this episode because last time I said that at the University of Florida they do that. It's the Ohio State University football players introduce themselves by saying the Ohio State. And I think they even tried to trademark the And I don't know if that was successful. I think that's like a pretty generic word that's in a lot of college names.
Well, if McDonald's can trademark MC, anything is possible.
Bad news to much of Ireland.
Very true.
So.
Okay. So today I wanted to talk about persuasive design. I'm actually hiring for a PhD student in that area at the moment. So I thought
listeners, email in
to the things. Yes. If we ever put that out, this podcast.
If you are somehow listening to this and you're not already like friends with us and you're wanting to do a PhD, you should definitely message Diego because that you must be so dedicated to HCI.
Exactly. If you reference this podcast at all, I think you'll get
it. If you use off-road antisocial with your PhD application.
Exactly. Yeah. So persuasive design, for anyone who may not know, is the idea of just behavior change or psychological theory or just understanding how design can affect people's decision making, people's biases, perceptions, and so on. And in many ways, it can be used for good. Maybe not now that it went all to AI, but things like Duolingo, lots of people enjoyed at the start. I enjoyed it at the start because it was a way of using like gamification techniques to help you learn a language. And if learning a language is something you want to do, techniques like that, that kind of try and hack your brain into liking something that's boring more than it should, are kind of good ways to use it. But I think it's becoming more prominent now in the zeitgeist around dark patterns, deceptive patterns. Like there's laws against it from the EU right now, and they're really pushing back against things like cookie banners where you make everyone accept all and you don't give them options, or tick boxes that are automatically ticked for things that are worse for the consumer.
Suddenly I'm such a good designer that there's laws against me.
Yeah, and I think that's what designers think, that the general idea that, oh, I'm just making good design. Why am I being punished for this? When the idea is that you're kind of taking away the autonomy of the user. Mm-hmm. By
self-determination theory says that that's very important.
Exactly. By basically considering your point of view the right point of view, even though you know that the user may want something else. And it kind of moves away from the general idea that design had, where we want to make the user's goals and intentions as easy as possible through design, to we want to make the company's goals as easy as possible through design. And it's a real shift, I think, in recent terms. Do you have any examples that you've seen in the world? Anything that jumps to mind?
Oh, geez. The classic is like, so I've worked on a dark patterns paper before, so I guess the examples are like in my head a little bit. But the classic is when you can sign up for a service like Netflix or a cable company or whatever really easily with like two clicks. And then canceling that service involves like three phone calls, a posted letter, a tattoo, an interpretive dance. This is somewhere between like the actual like UI design of the website versus like the, I don't know, like systems operations design of unenrolling from a subscription. But that's always my like go-to dark pattern, that it's really easy to start subscriptions and some of them are really hard to then cancel.
So one of the things from last time that is relevant here is the general idea of the sim and the player. And if you didn't listen to the previous episode, you might not know. So it's the general idea that people can describe their type of thinking in the same way that you can think about the game The Sims, which is like a life simulation game where you have these little characters that look just like people and you can order them around the city or their home, telling them to learn how to cook, go to work, learn a new skill, whatever it may be. You're basically playing little digital dollhouse. And in that game, you don't actually control the character in like third person with the controller. It's a point and click where you say, all right, go to the fridge and cook this, go talk to your mother, do whatever it may be in that house. And you're just trying to fill up these little bars where you have like hunger and social. This kind of disconnect is a good example of the disconnect we sometimes have in the types of processing that we have. And yes, there may be more than two, Justin.
Yeah, and Bizarro. I feel like I just picked that up from him. I don't actually care if there's more than one or two.
I don't care if there's more than two either. I just think it's a good splitting point to say, we know that there's these two types at least that are working this way. Let's work on them. And if we want to type it out further. Go ahead.
Sure. And I think like the whole point of the any duality is like there's the thing and there's not the thing. Like there's something and everything else. So I think you could, even if you split it out further, you would have like rational thinking and then all these other different kinds of automatic thinking or whatever.
Yeah. In this way, the player is kind of whenever you feel like you're in control, like you're thinking about your thoughts, you're planning the future, all of these things would be kind of the player where you're future oriented, you make plans, but it takes time, it's tiring. You don't want to spend the whole day thinking because it requires so much attention and it really gets to you. So you kind of make a little plan and say, okay, do those things. And then the sim part of you is the one that actually goes out and does the task, goes through the hard manual labor, learns from experience, gets emotional over watching a TV show, whatever it may be. There's this kind of disconnect. So if we think of it this way, whenever Dark Patterns designers are trying to elicit a response out of you, they're explicitly targeting the sim self because they know there's certain biases, certain operant conditioning techniques, certain changes that you can make to an interface that will affect your decision-making without letting the player, which would be the part of you that would realize what's happening, that would kind of try and work against it, that would be angry at the designer and so on. It's trying to be imperceptible to that part of you because as long as you don't know what's happening, you're not going to push back.
And it's like any kind of con, like it's like, I don't know, being pickpocketed or like, you know, three card Monty situation. Like the whole idea is that it's so smooth that you don't notice and think about what's happening.
Yeah. And the general idea that operant conditioning works on sims is a really simple idea. It's just that repeated action or actions that are rewarded are repeated and actions that are punished are avoided. And that's obvious from just living in the world where you go to work because you want to be paid and you avoid dogs if one bit you because it makes you scared. Like it's a general idea that some people can sometimes push back against when they're like, well, I'm a person. I'm not a dog. I'm not going to respond to rewards.
I'm built different. Have an amygdala. I don't have a rewards pathway.
Yeah. Dopamine, never heard of her.
Dopamine.
It
I
is
never
the technique
metamine.
That they use.
Go on.
Wow, you really threw me off there. I need a second to compose myself.
I activated the sim was supposed to be in control.
So one interesting thing that we've learned from operant conditioning, because we've been doing experiments on animals for a long time, and I talked about a few of them last time, but it's just that depending on how you reward something, it actually affects how addictive or how motivating that thing is. And the main thing about it is surprise or lack of predictability. Because if you have an animal and they get rewarded with a food item every time they peck at a button, they will peck the button, eat the food, and then eventually they'll get satiated. They're no longer hungry, so they'll stop pecking at all. And there's this general curve that you see. Let's say you need to peck 10 times to get the food. Just after they get the food, if they're pecking at all, they're going to be pecking quite slowly. And only as it gets closer and closer to the 10 that they start ramping up the pecks, and it creates this kind of like downward curve where it's slow and then ramps up, slow and then ramps up. And this is the general idea of why loyalty programs, like, you know, the ones where you stamp every time you have a coffee something like that.
I have many cards in my wallet for every loyalty program possible.
A lot of them will actually pre-stamp the card before they even give it to you. So instead of being 10 until you get your free coffee, it's actually 11, but they pre-stamp the first one. And that's just because of this general idea that the closer you get to the end, the more motivating it is because you feel like you've done your work and you're closer. Whereas if you have a variable reward where you don't know it, it's maybe 10 pecks to get the food this time, 5 the next time, 2 the next time, there isn't that curve because as far as you're concerned, you don't know what the schedule is. The next peck could be the one that gives you the food, or it could be in 20. You have no idea. And because you don't have this fixed knowledge of what you need to do, it promotes more dopamine release and it makes you more motivated to go after it. So if you give this kind of random reward to a pigeon, they'll keep pecking nonstop. They might not even eat the food for a while. They're just going at it because it's like the most addicting way you can create a reinforcement schedule. And it's probably why, you know, one-armed bandits and all these gambling techniques are so effective because you don't know. The next one could be the one that basically gives you all the money.
Is it a dark pattern that the package delivery services give a super wide window of when they're going to deliver your package? So you're constantly checking your window instead of like giving like a 10-minute window. So you're like not looking at every time you hear a sound, you're not rushing to the door.
Well, that's one of the things. Some things can be dark patterns, even though the intended consequence is just because, oh, it's easier to have a larger window. Yeah, yeah. So I feel like when you're designing a cookie banner and you put accept all in large blue font, and you have the like options in a smaller non-specific font where you can't even tell it's a button half the time. Maybe not now that we actually know what's going on, but maybe back in the day they were like, well, everyone's going to want to accept all. I make this really easy for everyone. And then if you are the weirdo that wants to go into the options and get into it, then you're not going to feel bad about having a button, but I'll just make the more popular option more visible.
Detour to say, no, the real weirdos aren't the ones who hit like the disable some they're like disable all cookies. They're the ones where when there's like 15 different sliders, you're picking and choosing, and you're like, instead of having none or all, you're like, I'll take these, not those, yes to that. That would be, I want to meet that. I don't want to meet that person, actually. I think that person's scary.
Well, technically, sometimes I do
that. Oh my god, I've already met him.
If you do reject all, it doesn't save the cookie that tells them that you've done reject all. So sometimes you get the cookie banner popping on literally every single page on the website. So sometimes I'll pick functional cookies or whatever, and then it'll remember it. And sometimes when you need to use a specific part of the website, they're like, oh, well, if you don't connect to socials, then we can't show you this YouTube. Then you have to pick the next one.
I'm in all of my technological interactions these days, I'm pretty much like, then I'll suffer, to the point that I'm now like running Ubuntu on my like home laptop, and like half the time it's like, oh, this straight up doesn't work in that, and I'm like, oh, okay, I just simply won't use that program then.
Me too. If I see the dark design patterns with a system, I'll be like, I am going out of my way to reject, no matter the amount of effort I have to put in, no matter if I have to go into the legitimate interest column and look through the 120 little tick boxes that I have to untick, I will do this.
I will not sign up for Netflix. I will go directly to the studio and watch the show be taped live. That way I don't have to sign up for these services.
So that's basically it. People in these design spaces understand now what the effect that they're having. Back in the day, maybe they didn't, but now there's EU legislation about it. We know exactly how we should do it. So the idea with the cookie banner, they have the big accept all easy because they know that the more difficult or more options and kind of more clicks that you have to do something, you're more likely to give up. And it's something I call analytical attrition. They're basically trying to get rid of the player part of you by just putting them through more and more decisions. And there's research that shows like the more decisions you make, the more tired you become, like sort of decision fatigue and so on. So it's basically just trying to put you through so much work that you just say, okay, whatever, take my data, who cares?
Analytical attrition, by the way, like you got to start putting that in your papers. You could make a name for yourself. That's got some snap to it.
Yeah, I only thought about it because I was doing interviews and I thought I needed a snappy thing to say. I haven't actually put it in.
Sounds like it worked.
Yeah, I guess so. Are you one of those people that gets put through analytical attrition and you just say accept all? Or are you, like you said, you will just not use the website at all if it asks you for your data and doesn't make it easy?
No, I'm definitely to some, like sometimes you don't have the option. If it's like the website I'm trying to book a flight on really wants me to do this stuff. And I'm like, well, there's only one airline to book this flight through. So like sometimes you have to, I end up giving up and just, yeah, accept all or whatever else it needs me to do. I try not to, but I think we're all, you know, you got to stack your values up, and there's probably someone for whom your number one top value above all else is going to be, you know, reject cookies and data privacy and whatnot. But I think for most of us, you'll run into some limit where you're like, okay, well, in this case, I will accept all cookies and do whatever, turn off all my privacy extensions and whatnot, because my value of completing this task and like taking this trip is higher than my value of not accepting cookies.
One thing that pushed me over the edge in terms of Facebook was, I think, 2000 and 15, something like that.
The election. When
it was around the Cambridge Analytica thing, where I was like, okay, this is a bit dodgy. And at that exact time, because so many people were deleting their accounts, they took out the delete your account button from the Facebook website.
They, like, buried it. Yeah.
And it wasn't just buried. I had to Google it, find a source like a newspaper that gave you the link to the help page outside of Facebook that would let you delete your account.
That's crazy. Okay, yeah. So because they did that, you were like, I will deactivate.
Yeah, I was like, I was thinking about it, but now, fuck you. I'm deleting my account and never coming back. And I didn't use that or Instagram or WhatsApp for a long time. I only slightly went back to WhatsApp now because
you needed to analyze all your friends' chat history from over the years.
Exactly. No, it was in certain countries like Brazil. It's how you buy things. How you communicate with everyone.
It is X the everything app.
Exactly. So these websites have levers, basically. So they make things that they want you to do, like liking, sharing, commenting, as easy as possible. And they'll try to entice you with like rage bait content and all of this sort of things. And then things that they don't want you to do, they make really difficult, like deleting your account, refusing to share your data, canceling a subscription, as you said. And I think now as well, for people who post, they kind of use the algorithm to change what people do and do post. So
yeah.
On Twitter for a while, if you link to an outside source, they would not show your tweet basically at all to your subscribers or your followers.
Yeah, I remember when I used to have to do ads for like my podcast or for the HCI at UCD podcast, the prevailing wisdom was if you're like trying to get people to engage with a tweet, you should always have a picture or a video with, like, for the podcast, we would sometimes make videos with like transcription, so even if it played silently, you would see what was being said if it auto played. Yeah, so they were definitely levering me into making posts that I wasn't otherwise going to make.
Yeah, because they basically want you to stay on the website for as long as possible. And if you go and click on a headline and go somewhere else, then that's not staying on the website. Yeah. So they don't want you linking to outside sources. But it also leads to this weird, like, algo speak, as some people have been calling it on TikTok and other places, where people say now unalive or other words because they don't want their content censored. And now it kind of bleeds into everyday life when people are actually saying that. Or they change the algorithm in the background. And then instead of seeing family updates, you see the most kind of rage-inducing or fear-inducing content, because they know that will create the sort of uneasiness in yourself where you want to comment, you want to share, you want to interact. And that's what they want. They want you to basically be involved in interacting with the platform for as long as possible. And if family updates just make you go, oh, that's cute, Aunt Helena went to the park and that looks absolutely lovely, and all you do is like, or all you do is send them a message on WhatsApp saying, oh, loved your pictures, then that's not the kind of interaction they want, because it's too short, it's not involved enough, you can forget about it once you leave. But if it's, I don't know, Uncle Pat telling you about how the earth is flat and how
now you're
the
in.
Gays are creating hurricanes, now you're going to be in there and you'll be like, God, Uncle Pat, how can you say these things? And then your friends that will somehow have seen this post will also join in, and it becomes this big thing where you're arguing with people that you used to like, because it's
turning pushing the frogs gay. Most. Yeah. I've been down this rabbit hole.
And there's this whole thing around the reactions. Do you remember when Facebook only had likes and then they brought in the reactions?
Yes.
And you had like happy and angry and so on. There was a time where they really up the algorithm for content that had those reactions. They found out that usually people would like things that they liked, but if they were angry or didn't like the thing, they would use the sad or the angry and so on. And this has come out in like later reports about what they were doing. They knew that the kind of angry emoji or the sad emoji and all these emojis were more likely to be placed on misinformation, on rage bait content and all this stuff. But they still rated it as higher in like the algorithm than the like, because they knew it created more comments. So because they wanted to farm engagement, and engagement to them was people commenting, then they stopped showing you things that made you happy or enjoy the company of others to things that would make you angry or scared so that you would comment and comment and comment as much as possible.
Sounds like persuasive design has been a really good and cool field that it does does a lot of things to help people. Basically, what I'm hearing is like all of society's ills right now can be traced back to persuasive design. Care to comment as a persuasive designer?
As someone who's trying to research these things and tell people about how bad they are, I feel like I'm slightly blackpilled into thinking that it is the cause of everyone's problems. Because my granny used to be like this sex positive, nature loving woman.
Yeah, she was.
That like, she would like had her own garden and stuff. And now, after being on WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever, wherever she's getting all this crap, she's like anti-gay, anti-climate change, anti-trans people. Like,
they turn the frogs gay.
Worst of the worst.
Yeah, I got you. That's, yeah, sad. It's the MAGA ate my dad or whatever. That's not what it's called. The Fox Newsification of my dad or something like this.
Yeah. But as you said, Fox News has been doing it for a while. Yeah. So I don't know if it's only persuasive design that's towards it. Maybe it's just
capitalism. It feels like it's a broader form of persuasive design, that even if it's not persuasive UI design, it's still this idea of like, again, your analytical attrition, like keep things kind of engage the emotional thinking sides and make it really kind of smooth and digestible so you don't wake up the analytical side. You don't cause the, hey, wait a second, is this accurate? Is this correct? Just,
yeah. Exactly.
Man, yeah, this is a depressing episode. I think, I don't think you're blackpilled on this. I think you're pretty much onto it. I mean, I'm also inclined to believe that like psychology and cognitive science has an outsized benefit on society. Like that's also good for my career and how I've spent the last several years of my life. But yeah, no, I'm right there with you that like so many things can be traced back to this. Yeah. Persuading others for some nefarious means and those means, as you pointed out, capitalism. Yeah. Often.
Yeah, because other reports have said that Facebook knew that these people had come in to like give them advice on how to reduce misinformation and so on. And they knew from past experience that any post that was shared more than, I think it was 20 times or something like that, was likely to be really bad misinformation.
Facebook got all this data and they're like, okay, sick. So pump the misinformation stuff. That gets clicks.
Yeah, they were advised that if they kind of banned a story from being shared for more than 20 times, it wouldn't affect 99% of Facebook users, but it would stop some of that misinformation. And they're like, but we're still making money, so that would reduce engagement. And I think, so there's the money angle, obviously, they wanted to keep making money. But now, because people are making content themselves, not only the money angle, but they're being incentivized to be salacious, to be, to spread misinformation. Like the amount of rage bait content I see on TikTok that is just Americans acting stupid so that Europeans will message in the comments saying, oh my God, I'm too European for this.
Wait, do you know this bait like style? I'm minorly obsessed with it. It's like a picture or a video of like a sexy lady and she's like, imagine going swimming with a registered nursing assistant. Now change all of the S's to M's and all the comments are like, imagine mimimming with a registered nursing mimimming. And like, it makes no fucking sense, but all the comments are pointing out that it makes no fucking sense. And it's just to drive engagement.
Yeah. Or the one where
it's
like,
it's harmless. Nobody's getting hurt in the end. Yeah,
I think that's one of the less bad ones.
These are beige patterns in design.
type of satire. But if you have the same thing happening in beige design, I'm sure the same techniques are being used.
Is this what those Bayesians are always talking about? This is what they're into?
Bayesians?
It's a pun.
No, I got it.
Okay, good. You updated your priors and now you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, God. I hear people say, oh, this person updated their priors and blah, blah, and I'm like, oh, please stop using this in everyday life.
I'd like to get a look at her posterior distribution.
Okay, I'm pro that now.
Glad I could reclaim Bayesian speak for you.
But going back to optimizing engagement.
Ah, damn, I thought I could distract you long enough.
To talk about Bayesian design, one of the things they're doing as well is using notifications to kind of claw you back in.
Oh, yeah. So Duolingo, they know, Duo showing up at your window and saying it's time to do your Spanish lesson.
Yeah, because like the idea of if you start an interaction chain from the previous podcast, you'll basically continue to the end. If they get a notification and get you in the app, you kind of have the cues and the environment around you that's going to push you towards going on the feed, looking at what the person said and so on, and kind of getting you hooked in. And if the thing you're doing is commenting on people's messages saying nursing, memming, blah, 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 whatever, and if people are replying to that, you're going to keep getting notifications and you're going to keep getting pulled back
suddenly in. Suddenly all of your content day, like, is comments. People posting this like cryptic garbage.
Yeah. There was a TikTok recently where American called the troubles a bit of beef. And
I mean, it was a bit of beef. It's maybe an understatement, but
I commented something like a bit of beef, understatement of the century.
Yeah, okay.
And that was like 2 months ago, and I've been getting notifications on people liking or responding to that literally.
Long story short, I'm in the rat now. This was all part of your radicalization interaction chain.
If I hadn't turned off notifications on TikTok,
then you would be in the rat now. But because you're a persuasive design scientist, you knew how to get out of that one.
Or because I was in the rat, right?
Sure, you can't be recruited if you're already a member.
And another thing that designers have started doing is that if you get a notification for a message, let's say, and you click on that Facebook notification, instead of bringing you to the message, they'll bring you to the feed.
Bro, I've been wondering for a while, is my phone a piece of garbage or is this a design pattern? I shouldn't...
It's a design choice.
Don't play this. My future employers are going to think I'm an idiot that doesn't understand my feel. I had a feeling this was a design choice.
Yeah, basically, there's a name for it. I can't remember, but it's basically the idea that if you're on the feed, you're like, oh, I forgot what I was doing. And you just scroll down the feed. And there's so many times where I'm just checking the time on my phone. And when I go to check the time, I see a notification, click on a notification, the notification brings me to the homepage. While I'm on the homepage, I start scrolling.
Go through this
and then I'm like, oh, that was a good.
Yeah, and then have to check your phone again to see what time it was in the first place.
What time it was. Yeah, I was like, what was the damn time? Yeah, so they know what they're doing and they're creating habits, which goes nicely into the next point I was going to make. Habits sometimes are explained in different ways. People have different definitions for habits. But in terms of how I think about it, it's an action that happens in a consistent context. That action is regularly rewarded in some fashion. And what that does is that it teaches the sim part of you what the reaction should be for the cue. So if the cue is I'm bored, I'm in work or I'm in school, and I start to become bored, then you go and open your phone, open a social media app, and the social media app is really engaging, then the cue, boredom, creates a habit where whenever you're bored, you go on social media, you get rewarded. And so from that point onwards, you create a habit of checking notification or checking social media whenever you're bored. And that's something I've seen in myself. If I'm like watching a TV show, and I put my phone in another room because I know that I'm not going to watch it properly if I have my phone with me. It'll get to a slightly boring part of the episode and I'll feel like my hand phantomly reaching for a phone that I know is not there because it's just this habit that's been entrenched in you.
Yeah, that's why now when I watch sports and there's like a timeout or a halftime or something, I just light up a cigarette. No, I don't smoke, but maybe that habit would be less dark than the habits we're already engaged in. Like me and literally everyone who could potentially be listening to this is the same as you, that like, yeah, as soon as there's like a task switch, a break between two attentional moments, it's like, okay, time to check my phone.
Yeah, and notifications is as part of that, where you check your phone to see if you have notifications. And turning off notifications actually makes people check their phone more because they get this kind of FOMO fear where they think, oh, did I get a message now?
It's the same as the wide window for your package delivery. Now you don't know if the package is here or not.
Yeah, and research has been done on notification bundling where they basically take all your notifications and give it to you like on the hour, every hour or every 3 hours or something like that. And it was found generally that people reported greater well-being, and they like less interruptions and so on. But there was still that FOMO where they're like, I feel like I was checking my phone more, even though the notifications were bundled, because I didn't want to miss something. Like
it, real ones, remember, you have the habit so much. Listservs where you can either get the emails like as they come in, or you can get them in digest mode, like once at the end of the day or the end of the week. And then if you get it in digest mode, guess what? Then at lunch, all your colleagues are going to be saying, oh, did you see what Martha sent to the entire department? You're like, shit, I didn't see what Martha sent, because I get all of my emails at the end of the day in an easily digestible bundle. This is like tale as old as time. I feel like as long as we've had technology, that does this.
Well, Google used to have an app called Inbox, and it was so good because it would do this, and only the odd like super important email would get through. And I can't find any other app that does this. And I could feel my well-being being better when I knew that it was being bundled. So even if I checked the email, it wouldn't be there until the time. So like, I wouldn't get as much FOMO. But yeah, designers know that notification bundling is good. And you can kind of do it now with modes. I think Apple iOS has modes, and Android added it a little, where you can basically have those notifications be hidden.
Bedtime and work and free time and whatnot. Yeah, I actually have that set up.
Yeah, I have it at work as well, where it kind of, well, at least on my iPad, it doesn't show
at least on my notifications. iPod Nano, I don't get notifications
during work time. But they don't make it easy for people. It's not like they're pushing it on you and like,
yeah, you have to go digging for that. Yeah,
you have to go through your analytical attrition to find it.
They're like, of course you want all of your, in Google's case, you want all of your YouTube and Gmail notifications at all in all of your modes. And then you can have all those Facebook and whatnot only during 1 hour of the day. No, they don't do that yet. But
it's so funny as well.
Maybe they should.
I thought that like people controlled their notifications until I went on a cruise where my granny and aunt were there. And literally, like their phone is just walls of notifications, and they don't even
honestly
swipe
everyone
them away.
I know who is not like an HCI researcher lives like that. It makes me feel like I'm the crazy one for keeping a clean desktop or like clean notification bar. But yeah, no, I'm also shocked to learn that that's how the rest of the world is living. Sound off in the is emails like... if you are, I guess just email us directly on our professional emails. Do you swipe away your notifications or do you just let them accumulate?
Because I feel like it just must only refresh if they ever turn off their phone or if it runs out of battery. Because otherwise they're just
no,
all there
then guess what? It doesn't refresh. Like have you ever like opened an old phone that like has been off for a while? Like all the notifications stay there and like keep coming in. Well, like they come in a bunch when you turn it back on. So you never actually get a break from it.
One of the things as well with that cruise, my aunt, who's very in all of these like Telegram channels, WhatsApp channels about these horrible things happening in Brazil that aren't real. She didn't have internet while we were
she
on the
cruise. She was deprogrammed for a few days.
I think it was starting because she was like, oh, it's so nice. Like I feel
so quiet and calm. And trans people are okay.
I'm just loving life. And then... I was like, oh, wow.
I wonder what could be the cause and effect here.
Maybe you should stop going on those channels. And she was like, no, I need to stay informed. What if I miss and I'm not informed?
Yeah, then you might be living like you're on a cruise. That would be unfortunate.
And I think I, not making it, but I advised him to get off all WhatsApp groups. And he told me he did it. Now I'll have to see when I go back to Brazil if he was actually.
They call it paternalism, but it's kids deprogramming their parents. What's the deal with that?
But I feel like it's helped out because he's not arguing about crazy shit.
Nice.
And he just goes on a specific newspaper. I told him, find a newspaper that you trust that isn't too left wing, as you say, and just read that every week. And you won't be annoyed by things that you cannot change.
The more you can like make controlled your media diet like it was in the before times, the better. Like when Reddit went public and Elon bought Twitter, I deleted both of those. So I was off of everything except LinkedIn, which I'm only ever on if I need to advertise a job. So since I was off of everything
and read wanky posts.
Well, ever since I was off of everything else, I was like, okay, where am I going to see like news articles? And I was like, what did I do before? I had an RSS, like a Google News, like RSS feed reader. So now I just have a bunch of RSS feeds that I subscribe to. And it's great. I see exactly only the things that I want to see, nothing else. And I can add to it if I want to, but I never want to because it's the right amount of content.
Isn't that what people say is the filter bubble?
Yeah, look, I don't care. Like, what, like, it seems like the options right now are the filter bubble or the radicalization of your siloed interests. So I'll take filter bubble rather than, like, I don't know, hop on Twitter and become a right-wing maniac or hop on Blue Sky and I'll pull my punch here, but turn into whatever they're turning into.
Yeah, there's just so much media about J.K. Rowling doing another thing against trans people in the UK.
I'm so glad that I don't know about that at all. They don't talk about that on like the three news sites in my RSS feed.
Are you any worse for it?
No, absolutely not. I'm much better for it. All right, yeah, persuasive design. Delete Facebook, hit the gym, lawyer up. Is that our takeaway at the end of this?
I can give you a few remedies based
okay,
on...
Okay, yeah, please.
If you want to have control over your life. So the first one I think we've learned about is notifications. Just distract us, bring us back to the apps, try and kind of just control our attention to be engaged with this content rather than what we want to be engaged in. So my first advice is turn off all notifications for everything and then go back and say, okay, maybe I'll give a pass to WhatsApp because it's actually good that I know that my friend is outside because no one rings the doorbell
anymore.
Wait,
that one reminded me, sorry to interrupt one more time. This I've rediscovered a love for the Red Hot Chili Peppers song Californication because it has... Red Hot Chili Peppers always have complete nonsense lyrics, but one of their lyrics is psychic spies from China trying to steal my mind's elation. And I'm like, holy shit, he fucking called it, man. TikTok is the psychic spies from China trying to steal my mind's elation.
Yeah, I don't know what to say, but he's
Anthony Kiedis seeing into the future.
Another remedy. So we didn't talk about this, but basically infinite scroll is the thing where you always have a next thing to scroll through. And the idea there that everyone is using it because it lacks natural endpoints. So before you get to like the end of page one on Facebook and you'd have to actively click page two. And that was kind of a falling off point for people where they would be like, okay, that's enough. I feel like I've done enough. Whereas if you don't have that break point, you never get a chance of
waking up the player. This is what I meant by RSS feeds being like exactly as much content as I want and not more, that it's not suggesting anything for me. It's only exactly whatever was written in the blogs that I follow, and that's all.
So the things you need to do for that is find a way to create breakpoints. So if you're gonna be bad,
set a timer.
And use TikTok or something else, set a timer. So there's app. Usually setting a timer won't work as well because if you keep dismissing it, then you just create a habit of dismissing it.
You can't be the prisoner and TikTok, the guard. You can't have the keys.
Yeah. So on TikTok, it will give you a warning after 20 minutes. And I have very quickly become tuned just out this
right away,
warning where
away.
I just go next. And it's one of the ideas behind research around design friction. Where if you
pumps
just
and
let
edges
people...
and friction, this is the sexiest episode yet of our 2-episode podcast series.
Never stop pumping.
Unless there's friction.
That kind of ease.
Unless there's too much
friction.
Now? You want the right amount of
there
friction.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
So you need to create something that will actively lock you out. So there's this app I have. I think it's called Timeout or something like that. Anyway, I have it, so it will lock me out. So if I use TikTok for 12 minutes, I think it is, it will lock me out for an hour and a half.
Diego going to the neighbor's house like, hey, can I scroll on your phone for a while?
Well, sometimes I do like just sit beside my boyfriend while he's scrolling because I'm like, I'm out of TikTok time.
It's the same idea,
but it's
that
great
calories
for work
from
because...
someone else's plate don't count.
Yeah, but before they have those digital well-being things.
They kind of try. You can set those up to be half decent, right?
But usually it's like 30 minutes and then it's done for the day. Or open it 10 times. And what I found was that I'd wake up in the morning and use up the 30 minutes right there and then wouldn't be able to use it for the rest of the day. Where if I have it like this, where it's 12 minutes and then it kicks me off for an hour, I'm not going to sit there waiting.
Yo, timeout has, or whatever this app is, has the potential to do the funniest thing of all time and enforce their own dark pattern where they're like, you're out of TikTok time unless you pay $1.99 right now and get an instant refresh.
Look, and shitification happens to us all. I wouldn't put it past
it's happened to me for sure.
The next remedy is kind of remove triggers. So if you know that when you wake up in the morning, you go on TikTok for 2 hours and then you're late for work, don't have your phone with you. I find that hard. So I have the kind of forced break after 12 minutes. So it's, or if you're watching a TV show, you know that when you're bored, you're going to immediately go to your phone and start looking up who this actor is or I don't know, Reddit, and then you look back up and you don't know where you are in the show, so then it's even harder to follow.
Then you rewind the show a bit, then you do the same thing, rewind to the same point.
Yeah, you know it's ruining your watching experience. Like, remove that trigger, put it somewhere.
A research assistant in our lab was saying his way of doing this is him and his girlfriend have a rule that you don't look at your phone until you've started eating breakfast. So you have to like start, you can't just lay in bed and scroll. You have to like start your morning routine, because they both found that like, yeah, you'll get to breakfast and you'll check your notifications. But now that the routine's already in progress, you're like, well, fuck it. I'm not going to sit here and scroll TikTok for 10 minutes. I'm already halfway out the door at this point.
Yeah, it's basically having the humility to know that
you're an addict
is being exactly, and your sim is being attacked from all angles, and it's not that you have low willpower. Yeah, yeah. It's not that you're a bad person because you can't break through.
It's that psychic spies from China are trying to steal your mind's elation.
You need to have that player prevent the psychic spies from working by making plans and making it so the sim doesn't have a choice.
I notice you quote that line differently than me. Is this a career decision? back to you in the studio.
Another thing to do is to force the status quo. Yeah. So the thing I talked about where if you know that they are going to pre-tick all the options that are bad for you, whenever you open a page and you see tick boxes, untick them all and then make the active decision on having to go back and tick them if you really want them. Or like I said, turn off all notifications until you feel the need that you need it. Reject all consent banners until you feel the need to turn it on. Like, let them convince you as opposed to just letting them control you. The next one is understanding your emotional triggers. So if you know that people pretending to be dumb Americans is a trigger for you,
or sexy ladies with spelling mistakes in my case.
Exactly. Know that engagement is what they're farming. So if you comment, if you share it with a friend and say, isn't this guy an idiot? Like, all of these things is giving them money and they're going to keep doing it. So think to yourself, does watching this content spark joy, to quote Marie that lady Kondo. I don't remember the name of. Yeah, she changed how I folded my underwear, and everyone comments on it.
On your Facebook,
if it doesn't
post,
spark joy, if it doesn't spark joy, don't watch it. Yeah. So I've been trying really hard to scroll through everything quickly, unless it makes me laugh, and try to make that the algorithm. After a while, it starts
LinkedIn
working.
LinkedIn has become useless to you, but TikTok has become better.
Yeah, but it's so easy to forget about it, and then slowly get back to watching people talk about stupid thing that happened at work that's meant to rage bait me again, and that it just changes back to whatever it was. So you really have to stay on top of it if you want to control your algorithm, because it's just every millisecond of hesitation, it's like, oh, they're really into furries.
is that what the algorithm gives you?
Well, I've heard people complain where they're like, I didn't like TikTok. It was just a bunch of teenage girls jumping up and down in bikinis. And it's like, ooh, that's telling a lot
more. And none
of
them can spell the word
you think
swimming.
It is. Yeah.
So you're really dodging this question about why your algorithm is nothing but furries, but we'll let that one slide for this episode. I'll introduce, maybe next time the banter segment can be about furries.
There's nothing more telling than your TikTok algorithm. So that's why I'll never unlock my phone. And then the last thing is the kind of pipeline effect, where if you watch one thing like one Jordan Peterson video pops on your timeline of someone saying he's an idiot and you're like, okay, I'm going to watch that. And then you start getting content on Jordan Peterson in general. And then it's whoever the next.
Yeah, I watched one Undertale fan theory and now I'm a furry. I understand how it goes.
Ah, so I'm not the only one.
Trying to make it a relatable metaphor for you.
Yeah, me too.
I like this. This is our very bad wizard shtick. Instead of one of us saying that the other is a racist, one of us can always be tying it in that the other is a furry. This is why last time also you were like talking about the elephant and the rider and the emotional dog and the rational tail. It all you decision making cognitive people are furries.
Yeah, just like riding elephants.
Mm-hmm. You're the Catherine the Great of research.
So is there anything you think you're going to do different after all this, or did you just know it already?
Well, I should turn off notifications. I think I am a notification, or I should bundle notifications or smarten up my notifications. I'm currently definitely an oversubscribed, like too many notifications kind of person. I don't know. Some of the other stuff I'm aware that I have some of these triggers, but I guess I need to figure out the emotional ones. Nah, you will not find me arguing with people online because you will not find me engaging with anyone online in any way. But definitely these like cognitive triggers of like, oh, the quiet part in a show, I'm always watching sports. So the break between innings or halves or whatever, time to get out my phone. Yeah, being more aware of them, figuring out like, I again went back to like, okay, what did I used to do in the before times? And I'm like, oh, halftime in the football game, that's when you make snacks. So maybe this is like replacing your smoking with eating candy, but maybe that's still better.
I have this one app that is trying to use the idea of temporal discounting the other way, where it kind of locks me out of TikTok or whatever for like 30 seconds. Okay. After I open the app, I have to like actively wait.
Okay, and, yeah.
Okay, I still want to be on it. And I noticed that I was like opening up TikTok even when I went to pee. And
then this app would make me wait. Get it ready, like pre-cook it.
Pre-cook it, yeah, because otherwise I would open it just as I started peeing. And then by the time I ended peeing, it would finish.
Yeah.
So
that's like there's an old Mitch Hedberg joke of like, it takes so long to make a baked potato that sometimes I'll just throw a few potatoes in the oven to see a few hours later, do I want a baked potato? Yeah. You with TikTok.
Ending on potatoes.
Very Irish.
That seems like a very Irish. Let's end on potatoes.
All right.